Good afternoon and welcome to Who's in the Kitchen. You're listening to WDRT 91.9 FM Community Radio coming from Viroqua, Wisconsin in the Driftless area, southwestern Wisconsin. Also, you can listen on the internet at WDRT.org and you can also go there for archives. And we also have podcasts from Digging Deep, our farming show. So we are going to take a little trip to Japan today. I made a friend at the Old Oak Inn. This is how I get all my guests. This is social life and then meeting people who are interested in food. And so my guest today is someone who grew up in the Driftless area, and it is Kai Var Epstein.
Hello.
And his parents are probably well known to you. Your mom is Lisa.
That's right.
And your dad is?
Michael.
Yes. Right. And so they live down around the Gays Mills area.
Thank you.
Went to North Crawford?
I did. I went to North Crawford only for the last year, though. I was homeschooled for most of my schooling experience.
Okay.
But yeah, I went to finished out my high school experience at North Crawford. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you've had both. Then did you go to college?
I did, yeah.
Where'd you go?
I went to university at Knox College, which is in like the northern Illinois area, so Galesburg. If you know where that is.
Right. And when we were talking, I found out that my parents and my brother both went to Knox.
Which is really cool.
It's a very nice little, small liberal arts college and getting to be well known in Galesburg, Illinois. How did you get the idea of going to Japan? Had you had an interest in that beforehand?
No. I really didn't know much about that. I didn't really know that much about the culture at all before I went. For better or worse, you know, if you know the culture, maybe you can integrate better or faster beforehand, but I didn't know anything, so I went kind of into the deep end.
Right. And did you know what you were going to do there before you went? Or did you
know? No. Well, kind of.
Okay.
Basically, after I graduated, I was, you know, looking for jobs in the area, so I just wanted to go somewhere that I knew nothing about, you know,
wow,
to make it a little bit more interesting. Mm-hmm. So one night I just searched jobs in Japan and clicked the first like one or two Google ads that had popped up, and that was for a private school teaching position for teaching English as a second language.
Okay.
And yeah, I just put in my resume and I got an email back within a day or two saying they wanted to interview me, which went pretty well. And
how did you do the interview?
It was just over the phone.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, they hired me and they sponsored my work visa. So I went down to the Japanese embassy in Chicago and got everything, all my papers put together. And within 2 months or so, I was on a flight to Japan.
Did you have any training in English as a second language?
I didn't. But the company I worked for, they said, as long as you're a native speaker, we can train you to teach what we want you to teach. And they had a whole curriculum laid out, so
okay,
I didn't have to come up with lesson plans by myself. They all had the basic bare-bone structure, and then
mm-hmm,
I would kind of, as I got more experience, add the meat to it, you know, and kind of teach in my own way. But the first company that I was working for was a private school, so I was mainly teaching students as an after-school program, and the age range was very wide, right? So I was sometimes teaching four-year-olds, and my oldest student was like 85 years old who was, you know, taking English lessons. And it was usually around one, two, or three students at a time. So it was a very small, focused group,
mm-hmm,
or one-on-one lesson. But after about 2 years of that, it was kind of more or less the same, and I was feeling kind of like I wanted to do something else, so I quit that job and I ended up being hired by a company that would lease me to the Board of Education of the local school districts. So I spent the last 2.5 years or 2 years teaching in the actual elementary and junior high schools in that local area as an English teacher to large classrooms.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So you probably
so that was the work part.
That was the work. So you got there and you found a place to live. Did they find you a place to live?
They did initially. Yeah.
Okay.
Eventually, after 2 years there, when I switched jobs, I found my own place later because
mm-hmm,
I had to move.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, initially speaking, they really did get me all set up in an apartment, and but to be honest, there was a lot to learn. Things are very things function very differently there, like both societally wise and so just the mechanics of how finding an apartment is, paying utilities, all of these different ways that you function in society is very different from what I'm used to here, right? But then there's the kind of the cultural aspect of it, right? There's a lot of things that are a lot of behaviors that you need to follow, a lot of behaviors that you need to not do that are that are very different. And we have those too. It's not like they're any more strict about things. They just have very different ways of doing things and ways of thinking about things that you have
to learn. I think of them as a little bit more tight than than Americans. One thing, I was a French teacher, and I noticed that my students, my American students, when we had exchange students, they were just so forgiving of their language skills and so forth, and the way they were speaking English, and they didn't want to correct them. And I said, no, you kind of do need to correct them, or just model, you know, what you would say, because you're almost too forgiving. And not demanding enough. They're here to learn our language. So don't let things go by that we really wouldn't say. And let them know how we would say them in a kind way.
Yes.
But I think we, as Americans, we are pretty loose in general about our standards. And if you picked up the wrong fork or you failed to open a door for somebody, I mean, we wouldn't really get all uptight about it. But I'm thinking some of those cultures, it depends where you go.
It does,
you know. And maybe even the class. Maybe an upper class has more, you know, higher standards than maybe.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, like with how people wouldn't correct you. Because the same thing happened to me, and I learned later that I was using completely wrong.
So does everybody in Japan pretty much speak English, or at least just can get by, or?
Actually, no. I was surprised to learn, despite Japan is very connected to the U.S. both economically and culturally and strategically, right? We have a lot of ties for military, for economics, and trade. Surprisingly, they have some of the lowest English literacy rates in almost all of East Asia, right? So if you go to China, if you go to Korea, the English literacy rate is going to be much higher than Japan. And there's a whole slew of reasons for that, right? Some of it is just kind of goes back to the fact that it's an island nation that was isolated for a very long time. If you go to the cities in Japan, right, if you go to Tokyo, if you go to Osaka, especially in the tourism areas, a lot of people will speak English in the tourism sections, right? But as soon as you start leaving the cities into the rural areas, I remember where I lived, by the way, I lived in a very rural area. Whenever you would go to a convenience store, whenever I would go to a convenience store, I would see the clerk. They would see me, and I could see they were desperately trying to remember their high school English and starting to freak out. And then I would just say the things that you're supposed to say in Japanese, right? And I always enjoyed the look of just relief on their face when they realized, okay, I can just go through my normal motions.
Say something in Japanese. I mean, if you went into a store, do you say hello to the shopkeeper?
Usually the customer doesn't, but the clerk almost always, if you enter a store, is going to go "Yoroshimase," or I'm probably mispronouncing that quite a bit. I never said that very often, but they would say "Yoroshimase," which is just like "welcome to the store," and then most people don't really respond to that. But that's usually what they do.
I know in France it's very important that when you go into a shop, you greet the shopkeeper, and if you don't say bonjour, I mean they don't feel you really belong in there. They're kind of offended. And so, I mean, these little things are really important.
They are,
gotta tell you.
Yes.
And even the fact that you went into a convenience store. I mean, I want to get to food.
Oh, yes.
But this is really fun.
Of
and, of course, I'm just interested in the culture and everything. And they're all, you know, very much combined. But so that does get me a little into the food. I mean, What's a convenience store like? What are the stores like? Food stores and stuff like that.
Well, the first thing I'll say about convenience stores, which are they're a big aspect in a certain part of the cultural cuisine in a weird way. So when we think of convenience stores for food, I imagine you would think of a gas station, right? We're thinking of like, for those local here, the Quick Trips or mobile one stops or whatever.
Right. You're mainly stopping for gas and meanwhile picking up a few necessary items, bread, potatoes, maybe meat, milk.
Yes. Some eggs. Which is crazy for me because I didn't even use the term convenience store growing up. It was always, oh, I'm going to go get a sandwich at the gas station, right? Gas station food is probably what we think of. But in Japan, gas stations and convenience stores are completely separate entities, right? Oh. You don't go to a gas station and then go get food. In fact, if anything, gas stations are more often paired with auto shops, right? So you'll have your local auto shop that's okay. Kind of connected to the gas station.
Well, does everybody have a car?
Not everybody.
In the cities, I'm sure.
Especially in the cities, not many people have cars because the public transportation is just impeccable. You can get anywhere you want with public transportation. As you get a little bit more rural, though, this is the same here, right? A lot more people have cars. So since I lived rurally, I got a car there, and I had to take my Japanese driver's license test, which is weird because here I passed the first time in, Viroqua, actually, and with no problems. But it took me 3 times to pass the Japanese driver's test.
Do they drive on the right side or the left side?
They drive on the left side.
Okay. So yeah, that's a little challenge there.
Yeah, it's just England and Japan that do that, I think. Uh-huh. I could be wrong, but I don't think anywhere else does that.
I wonder why that happened. Well, anyway, I'm talking with Kai Varepstein, and he grew up around here and ventured off to Japan, and you lived there for about 5 years?
Yeah, a little bit under 5 years, but basically 5 years.
So you're listening to Who's in the Kitchen on WDRT Community Radio, coming to you at 91.9 FM and streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org. And we're just getting into the food part of being in Japan. We just started talking about convenience stores, which Kai says are not really connected with a gas station like they seem to be here, especially in our rural areas. I mean, we don't have, I guess we wish we had more, actually, of little shops along the streets and you go in and out. And I don't know if they have those in Japan, but here we've got 2 blocks in Viroqua where we have a little, maybe a bakery and a coffee shop and stuff like that. But maybe in a city, you'd have delis and greengrocers still, and in Europe you have a lot of little individual shops as well as the grocery stores, which are just actually really coming. When I in the 60s when I was in Europe, they'd have a Migro or something like that, which was like a little grocery store, but they still had all the little individual shops, the bread, the pastry, the cold cuts, the meat, vegetables, fruits.
So you could kind of go everywhere were they all kind of in the same area?
Kind of in the same area, just go in and out.
So you wouldn't really go to a grocery store per se, or you could, but mainly you were kind of going to a bunch of different specialty shops to get your ingredients?
Right.
Okay.
And the thing is, that's what I learned when I was over there. I mean, people shop daily, which, we especially if you're rural, but even in my family, we lived in the suburbs, but you'd kind of go and shop for the week.
Or the month, if you're depending on how far you live.
Yeah, if you had a freezer and stuff like that. And so, to me, you go to shop every day for your bread, you go for a croissant, you go for a baguette, and just every day. But, of course, then you had your favorite shop, and you went in there, and they knew what you wanted, and it was very friendly. You knew the shopkeeper, and that's why you say bonjour.
Yeah, it was pretty similar for me. I grew up not going shopping every day. We live pretty far from the nearest grocery store, so that's like a 45-minute trip one way. So we would go, maybe growing up twice a month or something, get a whole bunch of bulk food. But where I lived in Japan, that was not the case because the grocery store was right on my way back from work, right? So it didn't take that much time to just go in and get what I would need to cook that night.
So is a convenience store the same thing as a grocery store?
No. They have grocery stores that are very similar to how we do things here. So
large.
Very large. Mm. Now, the possibilities of what you can buy are very different. You're going to see a lot of very foreign things. And I will say before I could kind of read Japanese letters and words, I did not know how to find anything that I wanted.
Oh my gosh! Again, that's pictures.
It's because I went into Japan. I didn't know any Japanese at the time. I barely understood anything about how anything works. I really went out into the deep end, probably a little more than I should have.
Were you anxious? Do you remember?
No, I wasn't. Although looking back, I probably should have been, to be honest. Like we'll get to the food a little bit more. But when I first got there, I misplanned two things. One is I misinterpreted which airport I was landing into. I knew the city, but for some reason, I had written the wrong airport as my arrival, and I had planned out how to get to my Airbnb the very first night I got there from the airport I thought that I was flying into.
Oh, dear.
But it turns out I flew into the other side of the city, and I had no idea how to even get out of the train station. And I remember asking someone for directions, but they didn't speak any English, so I was kind of out of luck there. And, you know, I didn't have internet at the time because I hadn't been able to switch the SIM card yet. I'd just gotten to the country, and I needed to switch a SIM card for my phone. I couldn't use the internet at all. So the only thing I had was my Airbnb address. And so I managed to get to a taxi and basically just being like, can you go here?
Wonderful, wonderful drivers who can get you across the city. I am just amazed, Kai. I know youth, it's wonderful. But I know a similar thing happened to my son when he went to France, and he did know a few words. But same thing, just getting out of the airport and to the right bus and getting to the right neighborhood and then hoping the bus driver will tell you, this is where you get off. Just all these little details. And now, you know, 5 or 6 years later, you probably really don't even remember how hard those first few days were. But you made it.
I did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I had a great time. It's very stimulating. You know, you're always... I wouldn't say I get bored easily, but, you know, when things are very repetitive in my life, I want to do something else. And being in Japan, especially initially, where everything is new and you're constantly having to think about stuff mm-hmm. as you go through the motions, I really liked that for a while, because eventually that gets tiring when it never gets better, right? You're always having to do that. And the more you learn about the culture, the more you understand how restrictive certain things can be. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. it's kind of just like Japanese people are extremely forgiving when tourists or expats make mistakes because they don't understand the culture. So they're very forgiving about that kind of thing when you make mistakes. But what I noticed is they can always tell the difference between when you're making a mistake and when you know but choose not to. Does that make sense?
Oh.
Like when you know what you're supposed to be doing or not doing, but you do it anyway and just claim ignorance. They can always tell that. And that's big no-no.
Well, so back to the convenience store.
Yeah.
You walk in, and is it big? Or is it, and it just have a few items? Or does it have prepared
it's
items
actually
to take home?
Usually pretty small. Most convenience stores are maybe just a little bit bigger than your whole studio here.
Mm-hmm.
And... but what I wanted to talk to you about with convenience stores, I guess for the first part of our food discussion, is when we think of convenience store food, right, gas station food, we're generally thinking of pretty unhealthy options, right? You know, you might have your sandwiches, egg sandwiches or whatever. I don't know if you've been to Quick Trip and seen all that stuff. But it's not generally thought of as like the healthiest of choices, right?
A lot of fried stuff.
Yeah.
And it's prepared and then it's sitting there,
mm-hmm.
either refrigerated or under lights or something like that. And
but in Japan, there is a very large population of salary workers, right? And these salary workers spend a lot of time in the office, right? Sometimes they're spending more than they should. And then they come back home and they don't really have time to cook something, right? So they will buy these pre-made dishes at convenience stores. And it was so common that certain companies, you know, really took advantage of that, but they didn't want to just make instant meals that weren't good, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these companies actually put in a lot of effort to make some pretty healthy and good meals that you do takeout, right? You take it back and you put it in the microwave, and there's all these little sections of the box, and you heat it up, and it's actually pretty decent, you know? It's not quite restaurant quality, but it's a lot better than what you might expect from a convenience store pre-made meal, right?
And what kind of a box did they come in? Styrofoam or plastic or something you returned?
Usually it was like cardboard bowls. So there's a lot of things like rice bowls. So things with rice in it that have certain types of stir-fry toppings. Sometimes it's noodles. They have these ramen bowls that you can heat up. When we think of ramen, we might think of like the dry squares, right? Mm-hmm. Or the cup ramens. And they have those too, of course. But in these convenience stores, they might have a bowl of like pretty high quality ramen that you just put in the microwave, and it tastes almost restaurant quality. I'm not going to lie. I'm sure some Japanese people might disagree with me on there. But for me, it tasted very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of Japanese were buying them.
Yes, yes. Right. And so you, at the end of the workday, you'll always see this like line forming of all of the salary people, you know, coming in and buying their instant takeout meals from the convenience stores and leaving. And it's a pretty common thing for just people that are single. Maybe they're working really, really long hours and don't want to cook.
So what would be some other common things that would be in there? Do they eat tofu?
Yes. Tofu is a huge staple. Mm-hmm. Miso soup is a huge staple. There's a lot of seafood, right? So, of course, there's chicken and pork as the other meats, but there's a pretty heavy emphasis on freshly caught fish. Sometimes raw, right? So you have your whole sushi adjacent things and sashimis, which are just sushi without the rice, basically. It's like cut raw fish. Mm-hmm. Some people don't like that. I know a lot of some Americans don't really like to eat raw meats. But it grows on you, you know? It's actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the thing you know, having watched a few little videos on it, I realize, I mean, you really want to make sure that's high-quality fish and really clean, really clean.
That is the rub.
And, you know, sometimes I think, you know, they have sushi now in airports, although I realize, you know, it's probably delivered that morning and it probably is pretty darn fresh.
Yes.
We have sushi even here at our food co-op here and now in some of the grocery stores. And then I think, well, this is not I dream of sushi, you know, beautifully.
Do we have sushi or do we have the California roll?
Well, right?
Cream cheese, cucumber, and rice, is that what you're talking about?
What actually is sushi? Does it mean it is made with a sushi rice, or does it mean it's made with seafood, or does it mean that it's wrapped up in a seaweed? I mean, what is sushi? Or is it a variety?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I think the word sushi is pretty broad. Uh-huh. You know, like some people might be hard pressed to call California rolls sushi, but most people would say, including myself, that yeah, that's in the spirit of sushi. That's what it is, right? Mm-hmm. But
Sort of hand-rolled, hand-formed.
Sure, hand-rolled, hand-formed. When we're thinking of sushi, or at least for me, before I went to Japan, I'm always thinking of expensive Japanese sushi, right? Like, you go to a Japanese restaurant, it's a whole ordeal. They have a dragon roll with all of the crazy sauces and avocado, and that's not... I didn't see a lot of that in Japan. They eat a lot more, I guess you could say, it's called nigiri, which is just a sticky rice with a piece of fish put over it, like raw fish. So do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
So imagine like a small piece of rice about this half the size of a hot dog. There you go.
Okay.
And then they'll put different cuts of fish right over the rice. And then there's a variety of different kinds of soy sauces or different kinds of flavors, and usually people will put a little bit of soy sauce over it. Sometimes they'll put a little bit of ginger on it. Sometimes it even comes with some avocado, which is pretty cool. But there's a very large degree of sushi quality. There's a variety of sushi quality in Japan that we don't typically think of here. When you go to a sushi restaurant here, it's expensive, generally passes itself as high quality, right? But the range of sushi quality in Japan is very large. So you can go to places that sell very cheap sushi, right? The equivalent would be maybe two. You get two sushi on a plate for 40 cents, right? Which is pretty good price, right?
You mean 40 American cents?
Yeah, yeah. Really? I'm translating the yen
really,
to cents.
They're really cheap.
Yeah, really cheap. And that is not bad. Like, it's technically cheap sushi you can get, and you can tell it's a little bit cheap, but it tastes good.
You
like, it's good.
You go home and get sick from it.
No, no, absolutely not.
But I do know that sushi can be hundreds of dollars.
Yes, so then there's everything in between. You can go to some really fancy sushi places that have like the highest quality cuts, and those are kind of like melt in your mouth tuna type thing, like really fatty tuna that I've tried it once, and it is very good. I don't know if it's worth the price, in my opinion, but I was living on a teacher's salary, so that might have something
to do with it. What, do you know what other kinds of fish they were using? What are the common fish, or are there just so many different fish?
There's a lot of different ones, but I think the main ones that I would get is I would always get the I really liked salmon, and I really liked tuna, and sometimes squid, right? So they'd put squid on it and mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. But the way that a lot of these restaurants work is you just order from an iPad that they have, right? You just select the sushi that you want, and then they send it on a little conveyor belt, and it just stops at your table. And then you pick up the plates.
Pick up your luggage.
And then to pay the person that's taking the check, they just come and count the plates that you have stacked up on the table, and then that's your bill.
Oh, that's interesting. So the convenience store is not a restaurant.
No, the convenience store has, I mean, it's very similar to what we would think of as a gas station. It just doesn't have the gas component, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know, they sell their sweets and pre-made meals and lots of different stuff, but it's not all that different from what we would think of just mm-hmm. Japanese food, you know?
Right. And yeah. So when you worked at the schools, did they provide the lunch, or do you go out to lunch? You'd have a lunch hour and you go out and you buy your lunch?
No, that's a very, very good question, because they would provide lunch to all the students and the teachers. And then you, at the end of the month, you would have like a lunch bill, which was very, it was not expensive. I was very surprised by how little I had to pay for my lunches. I was paying probably about $2, the equivalent of $2 for a lunch. And it was it's a healthy lunch. It's not bad. They call their school lunches kyushoku, and it's generally just a very healthy spread of things. So actually, this is the perfect opportunity to talk about kind of how Japanese organize their meals. So you have your central staple ingredient, basically, which is sticky white rice. You've probably seen they put it in bowls, and it's just sticky white rice, and it's pretty bland, right? I would never have considered that I would ever be enjoying eating just pure white rice. I'm more of like a fried rice person before I went there. So it was a very strange thing to me where you just eat pure white rice. But it's not because necessarily you're getting a lot of flavor from it. It's the palate cleanser, right? It's what we would think of as the bread of the meal, right? So you would, they have their rice usually, and then they have this kind of some sort of salad. A lot of times it's a pickled salad, so lots of different pickled vegetables like carrots and greens, and sometimes they'll even have some ham or meat in it, right? So it's like a pickled salad, and then they'll have a soup aspect, right? So they'll have a miso soup or some other kind. I don't really remember the other names of the soups, but very miso-based, right? And then they would have their protein section, right? And this was usually some kind of fish, but it could be chicken sometimes. It could be pork sometimes. It could be like a beef sauce, I guess you could call it. And the way that people would eat these lunches is they're all separate, right? And the way that you're supposed to eat it is you're supposed to kind of eat in a circle. That's what they tell their students to do, where you take a bite of rice, and then you take a bite of your salad, and then you take, you know, a sip of your soup, and then you take some of your protein.
But, and you're eating with chopsticks?
Yes, always.
And then the soup, you have kind of like a ceramic sort of scoop type.
Yeah,
thing,
it's
right?
it's a spoon, but it's shaped a lot different than you would than most of the spoons we're used to. I suppose if you go to a ramen shop, there's in Madison or something, you're gonna they'll give you that shape of a spoon. Mm-hmm. Have you seen one of those before?
I think we have them in our house. I guess somehow along the line, my husband was very interested in.
Yeah,
lots of different cuisines, and
they're useful for getting the broth out.
but otherwise, you use chopsticks.
Yes.
And are chopsticks? I don't know. This might be putting you on the spot, but are Chinese chopsticks different from Japanese chopsticks? Are they round? Are they actually angular? And are they long? Are they short?
I mean, I'm not really aware. I haven't been to China. Uh-huh. I would suspect they're pretty similar. Uh-huh. But the only difference is. In Japan, there were two kinds of chopsticks. There's like the eating chopsticks, and then there's the cooking chopsticks, right?
Oh.
And the cooking chopsticks are, it's like the difference between a soup spoon and a ladle, right? Mm. They're a lot longer.
Yeah.
And they're, you use your chopsticks to cook and stir and move stuff around way more than I would have expected, right? Mm. So if you'd like, I can get into some of the way the home cooking stuff that we were doing.
I would love to do that.
Because that involves cooking chopsticks.
Well, I want to ask you another question, and then I'm going to go to a station break. But you told me something about you do not pick up your food with your fingers.
Yes. So now I'm generalizing a little bit here. It's really important to understand that, you know, I definitely saw people breaking this cultural norm plenty of times, right? But the way that something that's very iconic to Japanese culture is they value presentation and cleanliness and neatness very, very highly. I don't know if it's the most highly valued thing out of every culture in the world, but there's a very large emphasis placed on neatness, cleanliness, and tidiness in all aspects of everything that happens in Japanese culture, and that includes eating and food, right? So there is a taboo about touching your food with your hands, and virtually all aspects of eating and cuisine-related things revolve around not doing that. So, for example, even just if you go get a sandwich or you go get a burger, there are always going to be a wax paper wrap that you can hold the sandwich in without actually touching it. It's just really bad form to have your fingers touch your food. Now, the notable exception to that, though, that I notice, if I ever went to, I don't know, fast food place like McDonald's, which they do have there, I definitely saw people eating their French fries with their fingers. So I guess sometimes there's some exceptions. But in general, yeah, you don't want to touch your food with your hands. It's always manipulated with chopsticks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or in paper.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to Kai Var Epstein. He is giving us an idea of what it was like to just plunge yourself into Japanese culture. And you lived there for about 5 years, right?
About 5 years, yeah.
And just coming from the Driftless area of Wisconsin, and then in college in Illinois, and then going to Japan. And I just wanted to have him on our show, Who's in the Kitchen. And so I'm Philothea Beeson, and you're listening to WDRT Community Radio 91.9 FM and streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org. If you'd like to listen to this show again, you can go to our archives of Who's in the Kitchen. And I'm just having a lot of fun. I hope you are too. Just kind of digging in and finding out what the culture was like, particularly around food in Japan. And you did keep house, so you didn't just always carry out food.
Oh, no. Well, initially I was doing a lot of that. But yeah, I started. I ended up getting a girlfriend or a partner there for a while, and she taught me a lot about kind of how to cook Japanese food.
That's the best way to learn is from...
Well, I wasn't great at it, but I did learn quite a bit, yeah.
Right. So then you'd have to shop
Yes.
So I was interested in the shopping and the stores and markets and things like that. And what would you buy? What would you have when you brought home to be have your basic stuff at home so you could cook?
All right. So the main staple, as I've said before, is going to be sticky white rice, right? And every Japanese household is going to have a rice cooker. Now, I grew up cooking rice in a pot, right?
I don't know, on the stove.
On the stove, which is very foreign there. Like, that is not how you do it. But everyone has a rice cooker, which is very easy. You just put in the right amount of rice, fill the water up to the line, press the button, and, you know, in 40 minutes you have a bunch of steaming white rice.
And it stops itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just cooks it perfectly. Oh, yeah, it's really automatic. I think everybody should have one.
Now, what we would do, which I learned a lot of people end up doing, is when you make a bunch of rice, especially if it's only one or two people eating it, you're not going to be able to eat all of the rice that's in the rice cooker,
okay.
right? So what we would do to preserve the rice for future meals in a way that it didn't taste bad is we would actually, after we finish eating what we were going to eat, we would take the remaining rice and we'd wrap it into small squares using saran wrap, and then we'd put it in the freezer, and we'd have a whole freezer full of these little rice bricks that were each like one serving, right?
I just did that. Somebody taught me how to make congee, which is rice cooked with a lot of water for like 24 hours or something, and I did that on my wood stove because it's really easy. You just have to put it on the edge of the stove. And I thought, this is going to be awful, and I thought it was delicious. It had a little bit of ginger in it, and I think...
Yeah.
And it's considered something, you know, for invalids or if you're feeling kind of sick, you know, it's really easy to digest. And I did the same thing.
Because is it kind of like porridge-y? Like
it's
watery?
Almost like porridge. Okay. Almost looks like cream of wheat in a way. That wasn't sticky. I didn't use sticky rice. Mm. But it was, and then I did just pack it into little, you know, little plastic bags, supposedly recyclable and, you know, compostable, hopefully, but just flattened and then stacked.
Yeah.
So that you actually have a little bit of rice set aside to use for meals. And that's,
We would do the same thing with, so a very easy dish that we might make after work would be some kind of stir fry. And there's a lot of different variations of stir fry to get, you know, different flavors, right? Like you can use different sauces and you can use... Actually, you can use the same ingredients with different sauces and get quite the variety of tastes, right? So we would have chopped up carrots and chopped up zucchini, which we would also freeze, right? And then we could just take out those things, put them in the microwave, and then saute that with meat and reheat it, right? And we could basically make these really quick meals that we had pre-made. But... One thing that I will mention is, so Japanese saran wrap is actually microwave proof. Like you can put the saran wrap from Japan in the microwave and it's fine, right? That's just standard. It's made to be that way because so many people do that. But when my my partner had come to visit, she didn't realize that you can't do that with American saran wrap, and she wrapped a whole bunch of food in the microwave and just like put the saran wrap around it and it just melted into the food, and she was really upset about it.
Oh.
I thought it was really funny.
Oh yeah. Oh gosh, you'd really need to know that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could actually make something that wasn't even stir fried. You would just take raw carrots and raw.
No, well,
and
what
then
I mean
put them
is
in
you
the
could
microwave?
You would freeze everything, right? Then I would take the chopped up onions and zucchini and carrots, right? And then put that in a pan or a wok or whatever and then put it with meat, and then you could stir fry it. And there's a whole bunch of different ways that you can make it Japanese, right? And one of the most common ways that I was familiar with was you would basically cook with soy sauce, mirin, I don't know. Are you familiar with mirin? Do you ever cook with
that? No, I've heard that word.
It's a cooking wine, but it's a little sweeter.
Oh, okay.
Right? So if you combine soy sauce and mirin and then maybe like a little bit of sugar, you basically get a sauce that's, I would say it's very teriyaki flavoring. It's not quite teriyaki, but if you think of teriyaki's flavor, you're going to get pretty close to what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, that goes really well with a, you know, a stir fry. Now, what I would usually do here if I made a stir fry is I would then mix it with the rice, right? I don't know. I'm not a chef. I don't know if this is normal, but
well,
you
that's kind of what I do.
Make a sauce with meat, with vegetables, and then you mix it with your rice, right? But that's not how that works in Japan. You really want to keep all of your ingredients separate.
Okay.
This is the case with cafes. If you go for different restaurants, Japanese cuisine is very compartmentalized, right? There's small servings of a lot of different flavors and types of food that you're kind of supposed to be circling and eating, although not everyone does that. Mm-hmm. I usually like to save the things I like for last.
And that sticky rice is usually kind of molded, right? It's kind of molded into a little bowl shape.
You put it into a bowl and then you flip it upside down and take the bowl off, and it just has this perfect round shape.
Right.
It kind of goes into the how much they care about aesthetics, you know? Like, they want their food to be very colorful, to look very appetizing, and taste appetizing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I used to run a daycare center for many years, and I found out that children really like it Japanese style.
Oh, yeah?
But I didn't know that. They don't like casseroles.
They don't like casseroles.
They don't like stuff all mixed together. So kids really liked to have everything separate. And to know, and then they could, you know, eat it separately or mix it on the plate. But it was so funny because once it was all mixed, they just didn't know what was in there. They didn't care for it. So they probably would have loved that idea of a little pile of rice, a little bowl, a little mound, a little sticky mound of rice, and then the different vegetables and things and pick.
Have you ever just eaten white sticky rice by itself?
No, I haven't.
I had never done that, and I didn't really see the appeal of it for a long time. It took me probably 2 years to actually not just eat it, but actually start enjoying that, which is kind of strange, you know?
Is it even salted?
No, it's just...
Just bland?
It is bland, sticky white rice, but it's the blandness is kind of the point. It is used as a palate cleanser between your other flavors that you're eating, right? Mm-hmm. So if you eat, there's a common side dish called konnyaku. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
They come up with the most obscure ways to use simple ingredients, but konnyaku is a potato paste. So like dried potato that's ground into powder and then made into a paste that's made into a gelatin. And so you have these things that, and then chopped into basically squares, and they have the most unique flavor. It's not bad. I like it. But it's just so convoluted how much effort goes into making this just little side ingredient, right? That's in a small bowl and you eat one of those. And
and what's it called again?
It's called konnyaku. Konnyaku.
Oh.
And it's a potato dish. It's a potato jello that's savory. I would say it's a little, it has maybe more the consistency of tofu, a little bit more firm.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
So if you wanted to cook here, Japanese style, and you went into the grocery store, what kind of condiments and things would you want to bring home and have available in your fridge or your shelf?
It would be really hard. The difference in ingredients.
Would you buy teriyaki sauce?
No, actually.
So you would start with soy sauce and a little bit of that mirin.
Yeah, believe it or not, this blew my mind. Teriyaki, which I always associated with like the quintessential Japanese sauce, is teriyaki, right? That's
right,
what I think
right.
of. The name sounds Japanese, which is true, but that is very rarely used in most Japanese cuisine. I can't think of any restaurant that I'd ever gone to where teriyaki was a flavor with anything.
Oh, so this is kind of an American, probably just marketed to Americans.
I would say teriyaki is definitely more marketed towards Americans, but it probably has the prevalence of, I don't know, Worcestershire sauce here.
Yeah.
You know, some people use it, but
I just bought it for the first time. And I was
teriyaki?
Yes, and I went to the food co-op, and I said, what's the difference between liquid aminos and teriyaki? And nobody knew the difference. And then soy sauce. I mean, are they all kind of coming from the soybean, fermented soybean kind of things?
So teriyaki sauce, as far as I'm aware, it's actually very similar to what I was talking about before. It's soy sauce that's lightly cooked with a bunch of sugar in it, so it's sweeter, right?
Oh, okay.
But then they also add, I think they do add mirin, which is that like sweet white wine, that sweet cooking wine. Oh, man, I might be wrong about this. I'm a little worried about misinformation here.
Is it rice wine?
It's a cooking wine. That's all I know. But yeah, it might be rice wine.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but okay. So I bet there's a lot of different kinds of soy sauce. I mean, when you go to an Oriental store, an Asian store here, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, you're just overwhelmed with how many different sauces and flavorings and things there are. But they're not Japanese mainly. I mean, there's not too much Japanese stuff,
yeah.
I think, available.
Actually, when I first got there, I wanted to buy some soy sauce, and I went to the... I feel like... Do you ever go to a grocery store here and you walk through a cereal aisle and you're like, that is a lot of different sugary cereals. Is that really necessary? Like, that's a lot of sugary cereals, right? When you walk into the soy sauce aisle of a Japanese grocery store and you're looking at all the different labels and you're like, is that really necessary to have that many different kinds? But the thing is, soy sauce looks the same as some of the other sauces that people will use, right? Like, it's kind of hard to tell just by the way the bottle looks. You have to be able to read the kanji or read the katakana that's on it. And so before I could read the Japanese symbols, I didn't really know any Japanese, and I was trying to find soy sauce, and I didn't know which one was actually soy sauce. So I took one of the bottles, and I asked a lady who was right next to me in the aisle, and in the best Japanese I could, I asked her, like, is this soy sauce? Now, later, I pointed at it and said, shoyu desu. But that's not actually asking a question. I didn't understand Japanese well enough at that point to understand what I was actually saying. And basically, I had gone to the woman, and I had taken a bottle of soy sauce, and I'd pointed on it, and then stated affirmatively, this is soy sauce. Which is not a question. And she was just responded to me like, yes. So if you can imagine, equivalent would be like, imagine if someone, you know, came over here and you're walking through the grocery store and they take out a big loaf of Wonder Bread and they go up and they say, excuse me, this is bread. And you just probably nod along and be like, yeah, good. So yes, but I got the information I wanted. She said, yes, it is soy sauce, so I got what I wanted. But then, of course, later I learned the language a little bit better, and now I know how to actually ask the question if I wanted to.
Well, what are the different kinds of soy sauce? I mean, there's a really thick, heavy, dark, or the mushroom-based, and
I'm
lighter,
actually not
lighter
super familiar. Sauce? What you're saying is correct, by the way, but I'm not super familiar with the names. I know that there's kind of... like soy sauces with slightly different viscosity or different sugar contents.
Okay.
Slightly different flavorings. I've seen like citrus soy sauce before. I haven't tried it. The place that I know this the best is because if you go to a sushi restaurant, they have all of their different like soy sauce flavors.
Well, I was going to say, you need to have a little soy sauce tasting.
Yeah, like. Yeah. But I just didn't even bother learning the names. I just saw the bottle that I like the best, dump that on my sushi, I guess.
So when you came home and you were cooking, or back to my question, if you would try to cook Japanese style here, what would be kind of your basic things that you want to have around your house, in your kitchen? You would buy some kind of soy sauce here, and what would you look for?
Yeah, I guess, So it would be hard unless you go to an Asian restaurant or an Asian grocery store. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they have some in like
they do in
Madison.
La Crosse. They have some nice
ones. Oh, in La Crosse they do?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, so your quintessentials are going to be your soy sauce, your cooking wine, your like thinly sliced pork. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if they sell it. I haven't seen it in any Western grocery stores, but they'll have little packages of very thinly sliced pork or chicken or beef that will be used in some of their dishes, right?
So you might have to slice it yourself.
So you might have to just slice it yourself. It could be kind of time-consuming. It's not super necessary.
Fresh ginger or canned
ginger? Fresh ginger is a huge staple. You know, you want to put ginger in everything.
I love that sushi ginger comes in a jar, and there's also chopped up ginger that comes in a jar, and that's really handy because a lot of times my ginger ends up just getting her dried up in the refrigerator. But
sesame oil, that's a huge thing.
Would that be toasted sesame oil?
I don't know if it's
toasted. Yeah, I think it is.
Is it toasted? Okay.
I think it is.
I know some of the more popular sesame oils have a little bite to them, like they're a little spicy, which is surprising, I might add, because Japanese cuisine is not spicy. Like when we think, or when I thought of Asian cuisine before I went there, I was thinking, like, Thailand is known for being really spicy. China has spicy food.
They don't use hot peppers. It really
Japanese cuisine is not spicy. Like, I'm guessing most Americans probably have better spice tolerance than the average Japanese person. It's not spicy food.
And maybe a little on the sweet. I mean, they're adding a little sweet wine or they're adding a little sugar.
Yes. A little bit sweet. I would argue American food is way sweeter, though.
Like barbecue sauce.
Everything
and stuff like
here, from our ketchup to our barbecue sauce to almost any meal we eat, it's just has so much sweet kind of sugar.
Speaking of that, do they have any tomato in Japanese cooking? I can't even think of it. Or any of their sauces contain tomato?
No, actually. It's not used. They have plenty of tomato on, like, fresh salads. They like that. But actually,
Fresh tomato.
Yeah, fresh for, like, salad tomato things, cherry tomato type things. But actually, now that you mention it, I never even thought about that. Yeah, there's not tomato in sauces. Although, they do like spaghetti, right? You know, if they have a lot of Italian restaurants are really popular in Japan. But when I say Italian restaurants, I didn't realize this, but when you have restaurants that come to different countries from different cultures, like different cultural restaurants, whether it be Italian or French, they cater to the local population. So they'll change some of the authenticity to better suit the tastes, right, of the local population. I wasn't really aware of this, but, like, if we go to, I don't know, a Chinese restaurant here, it's not really what Chinese food is like, right? There's a lot more sugar in it. A lot of the things that you might eat at the Chinese restaurant is just not really what it would be like in actual China, right? So I knew that concept, but I didn't realize how pervasive that is everywhere in the world. So when there's restaurants of different cultures in Japan, so for example, Italian. It's Italian restaurant that is very catered towards the tastes of Japanese people, right? So, I guess you could say what Japanese people think Italian food is basically like three dishes. There's your spaghetti and meat sauce, your Alfredo, and then your kind of seafood pasta, and there isn't much variety aside from those three things. Like any independent Italian restaurant you're going to go to is going to have some variation on those three things. And I'm like, but I want lasagna, you know? Like, I want to try some lasagna. But they never really had any of that.
Right.
So.
Well, I bet there's noodles then. We haven't even talked about noodles. I bet there's
lots of noodles. Yes,
lots of different styles of...
Do you know what udon is?
No.
So udon is... Udon. Well, you know what ramen is, right?
Yeah.
So udon is like ramen noodles, but they're maybe 10 times thicker. So they're very thick, kind of al dente noodles. And they are used in a variety of different dishes. One of my favorite ones is called gyudon, which it kind of means beef, or it does mean beef. It means like cow meat, basically. And don is indicating that there's udon, basically. So it's a beef udon meat bowl, right? And this is a perfect example of Japanese food because the main flavor from gyudon is intense umami. And so we in American cooking, every culture has that taste, that savory taste, right? Of kind of mushroomy meat. You can't really call it salty or sour or what it's its own kind of thing. You know what I'm talking about? But the flavor of umami is so staple and so ubiquitous throughout Japanese cuisine that, well, I mean, umami is a Japanese word, right? So it comes from there, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's a very umami flavor. It's extremely savory, just a little bit of salt. And it kind of has this thick noodles with thinly sliced cooked beef and then a very savory thin sauce. The only problem is, and I'm a little embarrassed, I'm actually not sure what that sauce is. It might be easy to look up. I think it's not soy sauce. It's some kind of, I'm trying to think. It's very broth-like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just mm-hmm. a very savory dish mm-hmm. that you eat. And mm-hmm. It's really good. I ate a lot of it.
And mushrooms must be a big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are they fresh mushrooms?
But not portobello mushrooms. Like no one, okay. You can't really find
no.
portobello mushrooms there. The main mushrooms, oh, yes. So the main mushrooms that you're going to find are, of course, shiitake mushrooms, right? They have a lot of shiitake. And then there's these other ones that I'm not sure what the names are, but they come in these packages and they're very thin. For those, anyone who's rural that's listening, if you ever see like ink cap mushrooms, do you know what I'm talking
yeah.
about? That grow
uh-huh.
sometimes they'll grow on hay bales.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little bit like that, but with a much smaller head. And they look
really long little stems.
They're long, thick stems and then like a little head.
I think they have those at the co-op.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you should check
out.
Oh,
I'd have to see.
Yeah, they're white. They don't look like ink caps.
Oh, that's actually a slightly different one. I'll get to that. But yeah, they're much smaller than we would normally think of as when we're thinking of our
right.
little portobello
yeah.
mushrooms, right?
Yeah.
And so you basically just chop it off and you're going to eat the full little mushroom in whatever you're eating, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one that's really interesting to me, I forget the actual name of it, but I've heard people call them spaghetti mushrooms.
Mm.
And that might be what you're talking about, actually. They're very thin, noodly looking mushrooms
mm-hmm.
that are... they're put into soups, and sometimes I even think that they're they're pasta, but they're not. They're
interesting.
They're just mushrooms that add a little bit of extra flavor and look like spaghetti.
I can't believe we're done, because I'm not done asking questions, but we're just about out of time,
and I've
really enjoyed having you on the show.
Yeah, I enjoyed coming here. I could talk for a very long time if you wanted me to, but yeah, I'm glad that I got the chance to talk with you and share
yes.
this.
Check with me, and I'll put you in touch with Kai, who actually is from around here, and he's been around the world now, bound to Japan and back, and it's really been fun talking with you and Kai.
Yeah, thanks, Felicia. I really appreciate the invite, and my first radio interview. That's pretty
yeah.
cool.
I wish Jim could have been here today, because Jim just loves to cook, and he's been my engineer for 15 years, but he's kind of taking a break right now
yeah.
for health reasons, but he would love to talk about
If you're
Japanese
ever, if you're interested in this kind of thing, you know, you have my number, you can call me and I'll rant about it for another hour and a half.
we should really get together and make a Japanese meal. That would really be fun.
Sure, yeah.
It's not something I'm really very
I'll teach you how to make tamagoyaki, the Japanese omelet.
You've been listening to WDRT 91.9 FM, community radio coming from Viroqua, Wisconsin. And thank you for tuning in to Who's in the Kitchen, and we'll see you next week.